Hey folks, this is To Know the Land, broadcasting from the treaty territories of the Mississauga of the Credit on 93.3 FM at the University of Guelph. Maybe you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen to podcasts. It's a show about our connections with the land base, how we learn about the land, how we interact with the land, how we defend the land. My name is Byron, and on today's show I wanted to talk to y'all about a weird fungus that I found. And its connections with the broader ecological environment. Because I thought this was really interesting, and I wanted to dig into it a little bit deeper and learn a bit more, so I figured why not do a show about it. And it'll be a short show today. I'll get to the music if you're listening to the radio, and if you're not, if you're listening to podcasts, then it'll just be a short one because, yeah, it's kind of singular, the focus, pretty narrow. But it really exciting to me, and so I wanted to talk about it. To give a little backstory of the context for me learning about this, I was at a walk with the field botanists of Ontario up at Dufferin County Forest at Main Tract off Airport Road up there. And it was a lovely walk. We found all sorts of different species. And it was lovely. It was my first walk with them, first outing with the field botanists of Ontario. And I actually wrote up a trip report from that walk. But to describe the place, Main Tract is about 607 hectares or 1,501 acres. And it's pretty big. When I arrived, it was lovely because there was sand in the parking lot area. And so I just right away got to tracking and found a bunch of invertebrate tracks. A lot of animals I don't know, but I think some millipedes and some other inverts that I didn't see. I just saw their trails, and I don't know their trails in the sand that well. But slowly folks showed up. I talked to this fellow, Carl. He was very nice. We walked around. As a group, we found a whole bunch of different mushrooms, pazizas, the cup mushrooms. We found some deer mushrooms, some pretty common stuff. One of my favorites is the foliotas. Found some of them. Probably an Eastern North American destroying angel, Amanita bisporgyra. And then because they are field botanists, they also got caught up in the plants, which I thought was really neat because I met the autumn coral root, which is kind of rare still in Ontario, not so common, perhaps expanding its range a little bit more, but uncertain. And that was really nice to see this autumn coral root and to come home and learn more about it later. Trembling polypores, some boletes. All sorts of neat different stuff, but the mushroom or the fungi that I want to talk about was the bigger mystery, and it was a little bit different. And we saw it a couple of times before we stopped to or maybe I saw it a couple of times before I stopped to ask people about it, because I wasn't sure what it was, and I didn't think fungi at first. I just wasn't sure what it was, so maybe didn't know the questions to ask and wasn't, caught up in the rest of the mushroom ID. But then I think someone brought it up because we ended up in the back area of the woods a little bit. And there was all these American beeches and some smaller ones and some larger ones. And we were looking around at these beaches, and while we're looking at them, there are these aphids on the branches, these woolly beech aphids. And these woolly beech aphids, sometimes people call them boogie-woogie aphids or just woolly aphids. There's a lot of woolly aphids. But these aphids, I'd seen them once before in Guelph at Starkey Hill. And the hangout on the branches of beech trees. In fact, I was there this morning. When I went for my run at Starkey this morning, I saw woolly aphids on the beech trees. But yeah, the woolly aphids hang out on the beech trees. And if you sort of tap the tree a little bit or the branch that they're on, they start wiggling their butts back and forth, sort of dancing. Hence the boogie woogie aphid name. And actually, I want to read a little bit that I wrote a while ago about a woolly ash aphid, but this is more broadly about the woolly aphids in general. And so, because they're so neat, they're so small and so weird, but they're really cool. So this was from an article about the Boyne Valley when I was tracking in there up near Orangeville. First, the woolly bit isn't actually wool or fur or hairs at all. It's a wax that's exuded from glands which are located on different parts of the aphid's body depending on the species. The wax is secreted in the form of threads. And I've read different reasons on why the woolly aphids might have these waxy threads on their bodies. It may be to create little microclimates. It may be to help with waterproofing. Maybe to aid in flight, acting like sails to help catch breezes. Maybe for protection from predators, from parasites, or potential fungal infections. Maybe even to stop them from getting covered in their own poop. Which seems silly, because I bet if I had threads all over my butt, it would entangle more feces. I've also been learning about woolly aphid life cycles, and that's even cooler. Many species of woolly aphid have alternate plant hosts, and in the fall, mature mating adults seek out new primary plant hosts on which they lay their eggs, and their eggs can overwinter. So from the eggs, this new generation of aphids that hatch in the spring are called fundatrices, which mean founding or original females. And they're all females, all of them. All the females who then who hatch from these eggs, because they're all females, then go on and they give birth to live young. They're viviparous as opposed to laying eggs like their predecessors who were oviparous. So they give birth to live young, and they do this without mating. So parthenogenic. They do this because they're all females. They can't mate. So they clone themselves and give birth to live young. And these young, who are actually clones of their mothers, are all female as well. And they don't need to give birth to their own young. And so they give birth to live young again. And then multiple generations throughout the season of these aphids are born. So multiple generations of females after females after females giving birth to cloned live young. And then for aphids, when times get hard, like maybe early fall when it's getting cold out and some of the plants may be dying or food is getting scarce, a new generation of both females and males are born. And this generation then mate in what we might call the old-fashioned way, exchanging fluids and genetic material. And then the mated females then go off and lay eggs as their foremothers did the year before. And then the eggs overwinter, hatch in the spring, all females. And they just go about their life cycle like this. There's generations of just females. And then one generation of males. And I wonder, like, do the males have wings? Do they disperse more? Do the females have wings? Do they disperse more in this process? So that the genetic mixing of the males from different sort of clonal lineages, the males can then fly away, go far, find new host environments, and then perhaps new females. And so then that's where the genetic mixing can happen. It's just incredible. I want to learn more about this. And I wish I was a geneticist to understand. And I wish I knew people who knew more about aphids to talk about woolly aphid habits and life cycles because it's just so cool. And I'm so curious because the aphids are amazing. And then for this particular aphid that we found on this mushroom walk, the woolly beach aphid, they are so intertwined, so connected with the beech trees. It's such a neat thing that, I don't know, there's so much interesting life cycle happening, not just only for the one organism, but how it's tied into other organisms, like the beech tree, and like the fungus that I'm going to talk about in a second, but I just wanted to talk about a little bit more about this woolly beech aphid. Pardon me. The woolly beech aphid was hanging out on these branches, and they're so cool. They like wiggle in the wind, or when you touch the branches, they start dancing and moving back and forth. And I was quite enthused to be looking at them with the other folks who were there for this mushroom walk. And I got some video even of just the woolly aphids on the branches. And it was really cool. They're just like wiggling their woolly butts around while they're sucking out juices from the branches of the beech tree. And they aren't like the woolly beech scale. A scale insect is a different insect. And the scale insect transports a fungus, Neonectrina, what's it called? The woolly beech scale, which is a different insect, Cryptococcus phegosauga, which is from Europe, but it has a relationship with this fungus, Neonectria vaginata, or Neonectria datissima. And when the woolly beech scale gets under the bark of the woolly of the beech tree and starts colonizing the bark into the cambium layer, the fungus gets in and then starts to create these cankers, which block off areas of tissue for the beech tree and slowly kill them. So that interaction is actually pretty bad for the tree. But the woolly aphid, the one that you find on the branches, the boogie woogie aphid, they aren't that bad for the tree, as far as I know. I mean, in some years, they can cause problems through a chain reaction with the fungus that I want to talk about, that can cover leaves and make it so they can't photosynthesize. But there's no real problems. But let's get on to the fungus. I just keep putting it off. At the base of every one of these beech trees that we are finding, there was this off color, how would I describe it? These masses of blue gray to black, and they were below all the beech trees with the woolly beech aphids. And I'm not sure who figured it out first, but someone mentioned that these masses were in fact a fungi, a mold actually. And they even named it. They said the honeydew eater, or a black sooty mold. And I came home, I looked it up. It's Scorias spongiosa. And what's happening is that the aphids are consuming sap from the beech trees. And when they poop it out, as the aphids do, they excrete a sugary honeydew, which is full of sugar and other minerals from the sap. It then drips down to the leaves below that branch that they're on and to the ground. And eventually the spores from the mold land on top from the Scorias spongiosa, the honeydew eater, the black sooty mold, or I've also called it honeydew poop eater. I land on top of the honeydew secretions, and then they begin to bloom and spread. And there's sort of like an asexual stage of growth of the honeydew poop eater that's kind of pale yellow. I've heard it described as straw colored, but I thought it looked a lot like sawdust strewn about the forest. And this asexual stage appears in the summertime and persists through winter. And then in the spring, the honeydew eater starts changing color. And it gets to like this from the pale yellow sawdust color to a dark blue-gray black. And that blackened, crusty coating is the sexually mature spore-producing stage. And we saw both of them. We saw them both hanging out in the forest floor. And I was wondering, like, could we use this fungi is a sign of the relationship between the woolly beach aphid and the beech tree, and represented by this black sooty mold or the honeydew poop eater, Scorias spongiosa. And so I was like, whoa, this is really cool, and got really excited about the spongiosa. Sadly, I didn't touch it. Sadly, I didn't smell it. I keep seeing references that the spongiosa may be edible, and I'm curious about that. I want to learn more, because some of the papers that I'm seeing where they cite its edibility describe it as anti-inflammatory, and I think that that's kind of cool. Of, you know, where is this newfound fungus to me coming from? And if it's antioxidant, anti-inflammatory capacities within it, at least on mice, you know, one of the papers describes it as being anti-inflammatory, antioxidant for tests with mice. Well, I want to learn about this fungus a little bit more. Sounds pretty cool. So I have been doing some research, and I'm going to describe it and read from a page that I found, and maybe we can all learn about it a little bit more together. Before I get into more about the honeydew poop eater, I want to describe a little bit more of the Ascomycete phylum of the kingdom fungi, because this is an Ascomycete. It's not a Basidiomycete like what you might imagine for your other mushrooms. This is more, it doesn't have the same mushroom shape. It's not like a mushroom with gills. It's not a gilled mushroom. It's a different kind of mushroom, or a different kind of fungi. It's not a mushroom. Yeah, it's a different kind of fungi. It's an Ascomycota, in the Ascomycota. So I'm going to read a section from Mushrooms of Ontario in Eastern Canada by George Barron, put out on Partners Publishing or Lone Pine. Same company, different name. But yeah, this division is the largest of all fungi and contains some of the most highly prized and edible species, morels and truffles. Most sac fungi, however, are not important as food sources because they are either poisonous or too rare, small, tough, or flimsy. While morels and truffles are treasured by gourmets, and other species of sac fungi are also considered edible and desirable, keep in mind that some sac fungi are poisonous. For many, edibility is still unknown. Thus, for the purposes of this guide, sac fungi are considered not edible, unless otherwise noted. Interestingly, it is seldom reported that some of the morels are rather bland and not as choice as the gourmets would allow. So if you are disappointed by your first morel, give them another try. False morel, although classified as poisonous, is popular edible fungus, especially in Eastern Europe. While many people eat it with impunity, this fungus has been responsible for the deaths of hundreds of people over the years and should be avoided. There are a number of sac fungi also cause damage as parasites of garden ornamental plants, agricultural crops. Many of the sac fungi are extremely interesting biologically as wood rotters, as parasites, insects, plants, or other fungi, or as saprobes on a wide range of organic materials. A few are known to be important in mycorrhizal association with trees. Sac fungi are so called because the sexual spores, the ascospores, are produced in a sac-like mother cell, the ascus. The number of spores in each sac varies in different species, but it's usually 8. Ascospores are extremely small and measure in the micrometers. 1 millimeter is about 1,000 micrometers. Spore-containing sacs are produced in large numbers, millions, in the fruit body, the ascoma, which can be of 3 different types: Cleistocium, Parathecium, and Apothecium. The Cleistocium, I think that means closed, is a tiny sphere, usually less than a millimeter in diameter, and is difficult to spot without a hand lens. Thousands of sacs with their spores are produced inside the Cleistocium, and these sacs are eventually released by the breakdown of the outside wall of the fruit body. In your garden, you will often find the fruit bodies of powdery mildews, which appear as dark dots on the undersurface of leaves of numerous ornamental host plants. More than 30,000 species of flowering plants are attacked by powdery mildews. The Parathecium, tiny flask-shaped fruit body, and the sacs with their spores produced inside. Individual parathecia are usually less than 1 millimeter tall. Sometimes, however, they can be produced in such abundance that they are readily seen en masse, as in Nectria. Often parathecia are produced in large numbers and embedded in large fungal mass referred to as stroma. In Xylaria polymorpha, for example, the stroma is large for a fungus and give rise to the common name of dead man's fingers. If you break Xylaria in two, you will see many tiny chambers lining the outside edge of the stroma. Each one of these chambers is a parathecium. Parathecia are usually embedded in the stroma with only the neck protruding. The protruding necks give the surface of the stroma a pimpled appearance. These spores are either shot out of the pore tip of the neck or ooze out like toothpaste. The Apothecia is the largest and most variable of the fruit body types. Apothecia are shaped like plates, cups, saucers, or urns. Some Apothecia are clavate or club-shaped, and they have stalked caps. The cup, saucer, or disc, or discoid, shapes are the classical apothecial forms, but the fruit bodies of morels, false morels, saddle fungi, and the like are also considered apothecia. The key feature of sac fungi with apothecia is the spore sacs are produced in a layer, hymenium, over the upper or outside facing surface of the fruit body and are exposed to air at maturity. A single fruit body might produce hundreds of millions of sacs over its surfaces. In sac fungi with apothecia, the spores are discharged violently. When ripe, a sac explodes and shoots its spores into the air above the fruit body. Ascospores are so tiny that they're almost invisible. Sometimes, however, millions of sacs fire simultaneously into the air, and this cloud of hundreds of millions of spores appears as smoke. This phenomenon is called puffing. If you approach a cup fungus carefully and breathe on it gently, it might reward you by puffing. The tiny spores are carried great distances by the wind to new sites for growth. So again, that was from Mushrooms of Ontario and Eastern Canada by George Barron off Partners Publishing or Lone Pine Press. It's a fairly common book. I like it. Great for my area here in Guelph and Southern Ontario. Very useful. I wanted to read this section from a description from, what is this? The National Audubon Society, Mushrooms of North America. This book just came out this year. It's pretty good. I've used it here and there. It's not quite a field guide, but a nice thing to have around to be used similarly to a field guide. But yeah, again, it's not quite a field guide. It's just so big. You know, it's big and heavy and has a lot to it. But on page 52, there is a page describing Scoria spongiosa. They name it the aphid soot sponge. But again, it's the black sooty mold or the honeydew eater or the honeydew poop eater or the aphid honeydew poop eater. But this is the focus of the show. Yeah. Hardly appearing a fungal at all, this species is easily identified once one recognizes it as a fungi. The brownish, yellow to sooty black, amorphous, spongy masses of Scoria spongiosa grow on the trunks, branches, and fallen debris of beech and alder trees. But the fungus does not directly consume any part of the tree. Instead, it feeds on the honeydew secreted by aphids. These beech blight aphids and woolly alder aphids do feed directly on the tree, but rarely cause much damage to it. Interesting they use the term beech blight aphids, because I haven't associated with them with beech blight in my life. That's not what I understand them for, but maybe something new I have to look into. The growth habit. Single to several masses on the same tree, congealing on or hanging from any surface, including tiny twigs dwarfed by the mass. The fruiting body, a blob-like or blocky mass, the main part, apart from smeared extensions, is 2 to 15 centimeters long, light brownish yellow at first, eventually turning deep black, intricately bushy or spongy, and very lightweight. The habitat is on or under living beech or alder trees in woods. Its range is throughout the east. Season August to May, transitioning from yellow to black during the fall. Lookalikes. There are no close commonly found lookalikes. Ipiosporina morbosa, or black knot fungus, which produces solid, lumpy, solid black masses on the branches and twigs of cherry trees, plum trees, and their relatives. So that one might look alike. And I could see how it might look alike, but that one's kind of smoother in a lot of contexts and more collected on a mass, whereas this one's like a hardened goo. It's a lot more amorphous. What else did it say? Along with Scoria spongiosa, it is a member of the Dothidiomycetes, a huge class of mostly tiny dry fungi that can hardly be considered mushrooms. And they say that it's not commonly found. Not commonly found. But, you know, I didn't see it out there today when I was out. But when I was out with this group, the Field Botanists of Ontario, for this mushroom walk where I first saw this, it was in a lot of places in that forest, at Main Tract in the Dufferin County Forest. It was a lot of places there. In the Ascomycete Fungi of North America, Mushroom Reference Guide by Michael W. Bug, Alan E. Bessett, and Arlene R. Bessett, that has a description of the Scoria spongiosa as well, but it's a little bit more complex. But I'm going to read it anyways. Because it is a bit more complex, but I'm going to read it anyways because I think some of y'all may understand it better than I do, and it might be useful. So again, this is from Ascomycete Fungi of North America, a mushroom reference guide by the University of Texas Press. It's a costly book, but it's a fancy book, and it's a nice book, and it's heavy, and there's lots of information. Not a field guide, but a reference guide to have at home. And don't bring this one into the field because it's too nice, but costly too. Over $100 Canadian, so I don't know what it is American. But Scoria spongiosa, beech aphid poop eater. Yes. Macroscopic features, fruit body, a sponge-like loose mycelial subiculum, up to 15 or more centimeters broad and 6 or more centimeters tall on leaf and twigs of American beech, Fagus grandifolia. Cream to buff and resembling a large yellow sponge with a gelatinous texture when young, and in asexual phase, eventually black in the sexual phase at maturity. Microscopic features, ascospores 12 to 15 by 2.5 to 3 micrometers at maturity, yellowish hyaline with 3 septa by ciliate. The asci are 40 to 45 by 7 micrometers, 8 spored, obovate to clavate, thick walled, appearing as croziers in a pseudothecium on proliferating ascogenous hyphae. Conidia produced in Phyllites, a dark brown pigment on the inner wall of the conidiodiogenous hyphae, becomes compacted and forms locules into which conidia are exuded in a slime-like matrix. Sorry, it's so complex. Some of you probably know exactly what I'm saying, and I'm mispronouncing things, and I'm sorry about that. But occurrence exclusively on branches and leaves of American beech trees. So this one runs counter to the other one because the other one said there's on the elms, I think it said. So, is it just beeches? The yellow stage first appears during summer and fall and persists through winter into spring when the black stage develops. Eastern North America common. So that one also runs counter to what the other book said, how the black begins in the fall. And I wonder if this is written by the university or is published by the University of Texas Press. And I think maybe Alan Bessett and Michael Bug and Arlene R. Bessett, maybe they're further south, and the other book was written by folks further north. So maybe just as it gets colder, then the fruiting bodies appear, the sexually mature stage of the fungus appears. Comments. Scorus spongiosa is one of the capnodiale sooty molds that grow on insect honeydews or sugary plant exudates. The most of the sooty molds that grow on leaves and conifer needles are quite small and thin. This species can be as large as a football and is distinctive. It can be found under colonies of beech tree aphids. The mold occurs on the surface of the plant and cause no harm except possibly reduce photosynthesis by blocking sunlight. Yeah. So I think I mentioned that before, that sometimes, and I have photos of this too, that the fungi, when it's on the surface of the leaves, it looks like the leaves are coated with sawdust. It looks like someone has cut part of the tree off up above, and all the sawdust has fallen and has coated some of the leaves. And then it will eventually go black later on in the year. And I imagine because of the sugary nature of the sap, it's kind of sticky. So even if it rains, it probably doesn't wash off that much. But I'm just still learning about this and still observing it for the first time this year. I haven't really paid attention, nor I'm not even sure if I've noticed it before. But it is, again, it's pretty cool. And I love things that are connected with other life forms in the forest and how complex it reveals things to be. So the sooty mold, the honeydew poop aphid, Scorus spongiosa, and then the aphid itself, the woolly beech aphid, and then the beech trees themselves, the American beech. And what other components are we missing out? What other components of this community do I not know about? And wouldn't it be nice, and I know people have sort of hinted at doing this, but I don't know how well it's turned out, if we organized our field guides not based on phylogenetics, but if we had field guides that were organized based on communities. So a field guide saying, okay, let's start with the beech tree. And then who are we going to see in connection to the beech tree? Well, we might see sugar maples. So let's keep that. Maybe we pick a forest composition and then we decide to spread out and get diverse from that forest composition, looking at the associates, looking at who these plants are in community with. So we have the beech tree, we have the aphid, we have the sooty mold, the honeydew poopy eater, we have whoever feeds on this mushroom, we have maybe other species of fungi that are growing nearby or growing within that space. We have the birds that like to nest with the beeches, maybe some woodpeckers that put their holes in the old beech trees. We have oaks that live near the beech trees as well in certain, like in the upland forests. Talk about, yeah, there's just so much complexity that we can get into if we look at and organize based on not on like, again, these phylogenetics, like who evolved from who, but who hangs out, who's in community, who's in relationship with each other. And I think it would be also probably more likely to be able to find things that way, because we may not always see the beech aphids with the beech tree, but we may find tracks and traces of them. And we may not find maples always with beech trees, but maybe we can organize, maybe we can organize a book in a way that acknowledges these communities. Maybe it has like a follow-up, like, if you've seen the beech tree, look for these species as well, with the page number with those species in them. And it can act like a web of connection rather than a line or string or chain of connection. Yeah, I'm just riffing here. I don't know. But if anybody, publishers, whomever are listening, maybe that's an idea for how to go forward. Anything else I wanted to talk about this? Oh, I just wanted to, yeah, I think I already mentioned that there's a couple of papers out there that describe the Scoria spongiosa, the beech aphid poop eater, that describe how it's edible. I've never used it for food. I don't know anyone who has. And I've only found a couple of mentions of its edibility. It does not look edible and it does not look appealing to me. But it's something I want to learn more about and understand deeper. So I'm going to look into it. Yeah, I think that's it. If you want to learn more about the show, if you ever want to reach out because you know something about the thing I'm learning about, and I don't, and I haven't mentioned on the show, but you know it and you want to share, please email me. Please let me know. toknowtheland@gmail.com, or hit me up on Instagram @toknowtheland. I want to learn more. That's why I do this show. So if you got something, share it, please. If you want to know more about the show, again, you can email me or Instagram, or also www.toknowtheland.com. That's a great way to find out about the show. And there's blog entries where I write about things I'm learning about as well, whatever. So you can learn about it that way. If you feel so inclined, you can make a donation to the show. You can toknowtheland.com/donate. That's a great thing to do. Thank you, everybody who's doing that. I appreciate it. Makes things easier. It's good. I think that's it. Yeah, that's all. Take care.